This isn't a true crime podcast. This episode isn't about gore, mystery, or shock value. It's about respect. It's about how we hold stories. It's about what happens when a place is hurting. If you're here for a whodunit episode, this will probably disappoint you. But if you're curious how healing happens, quietly, deeply, slowly, you're in the right place. This is a how do we heal conversation. Today, join me as we're going into the known. This series is all about rediscovering rhythms, stories, and ancestral wisdom that can ground us today. Because sometimes the answers that we're searching for, they've already been spoken by people, by place, by the land itself. I'll be honest with you. This episode wasn't even on my original radar. It wasn't a planned episode. But for the last 3 weeks, I have felt this quiet, persistent pull to get it out there. Even though finding the right words has been hard. Even though it's 11 o'clock at night, the night before this is being released, and I'm recording. There's something about this story, this land, this intersection of grief and healing that wouldn't let go. So here we are. And maybe, just maybe, that's exactly how this was supposed to happen. I've spent over 2 years slowly piecing this story together, not to solve a crime, not to sensationalize, but to listen, to understand what the point was, what the land was trying to tell us. And today, I'm inviting you to listen with me. Reclaim your rhythm. Rethink the rules. Rewrite your life. This is Wildly Intentional, the show where we question the scripts we've inherited and build a life, family, and legacy on purpose. If you're done living on autopilot, come with a curious mind and a courageous heart. Here, we talk about what it means to question, unlearn, create, and build what truly matters. I'm your host, Mandy, maverick mom of three, maker, family culture builder, lifelong question asker, and the friend people call when they're ready to rethink, well, everything. I'm here to shake the norms, tell the truth, and light the way forward. We thought we were just looking for space, a place with more room to breathe, to grow, to raise our family, get dirt under our fingernails. For over a decade, Tom and I searched. We took long drives, we found places we loved, we wrote love letters to landowners, hoping and dreaming, but it never quite clicked. Funny enough, in 2020, we decided we're just going to stay put. All our projects at the old house were done, and we figured this is it. We're just going to sit back and enjoy what we have. Then, the very next week, our farm hit the market. Tom was really sick at the time, and I had him act as my realtor, not my husband, and book the showing. The stars aligned. The seller was flooded with interest, but we were only one of three showings that she allowed. We made an offer. It was accepted. Even now, Tom and I cannot really explain the pull that got us here. But it was undeniable. We thought we were choosing the land. The truth is, the land was choosing us. The land that I am standing on right now has seen joy, grief, violence, and hope. Long before my family, and long before theirs, it remembers. This isn't some spooky, haunted farm. It's a family place, a place where people are raising kids, feeding animals, working the soil, building memories. And from the very first time that I stood here, something felt different. Heavy. Not creepy. Not evil. Just like something was holding its breath. It wasn't loud. It was actually very quiet. You could feel it in the way that the wind moved through the trees, in the way the ground felt under our feet. Land remembers. Have you ever felt like a place was speaking to you? Like it held more than just soil, but memory. Maybe it's a stretch of woods you know, a small town, a quiet patch of earth that you just can't stop thinking about. That's how this land was for us. We didn't just move onto the land. We moved into a story, one with roots, one with wounds, and one with possibility. When we purchased this farm, it was 6 acres, an old farmhouse, and a few outbuildings. And our plan was simple. Renovate the house, flip the farm, move on to something bigger. It was meant to be a pit stop. We even convinced our neighbors at our old house to let us live in their camper while we fixed this house up. So for 47 days, we lived in that camper. And then everything changed. After a month of Tom and I solo demoing this house, our contractor sat us down and asked the question point blank, why are you saving this house? The foundation was cracked. The plumbing was rotten. The electrical was old knob and tube. Plaster walls were breaking. It was a mess. That day, we made the call. Stop the renovation. Tear it down. Immediately, the energy in the house shifted. Where it once felt, let's get after it, now felt pissed. We felt like we were being watched. People would pull into the driveway, stare at the house, and ask us if someone was inside. We were convinced a spirit was. We just didn't know who or why. What we did know was this. We owned a house that we never spent a single night in. Not one. The plan had been to move in after renovations. But the renovations never happened. And suddenly, we were living on land and not in a house that came with it. I really believe places carry memory, that the land remembers what people forget. And when I discovered that one of my ancestors had been murdered here, on this land, I stopped trying to rush through it, and I started listening. We hired a permaculture team to help us design the layout, and that relationship eventually led me to Fred and becoming the executive director of the organization. I don't think anything that I am telling you today is a coincidence. It really feels to me like the land had something to say, and we were quiet enough to hear it. This episode is a story of how we listened and how land, if we let it, can be a witness, a healer, and a keeper of stories. After we decided not to renovate the farmhouse, we hit a hard pause. We had just bought an expensive piece of land, and now we had nowhere to live. Winter was coming fast. The camper needed winterizing. The days were getting tougher. We had to figure something out. Thankfully, with the help of my parents, we brought in a single wide trailer to live in. We poured footings. We had a friend transport and set our trailer. We dug septic lines. We hooked up water and power. And just before Thanksgiving that year, we had a home base. While we kept the old farmhouse standing through the winter to use as a well, the energy of the place had shifted. It was like the house knew its time was up. And since the living situation wasn't unfolding the way that we had imagined, we shifted our focus outside. After all, land was the reason that we wanted to move here in the first place. We began working on the landscape design with Fred, mapping out where the edible gardens would go, planting orchards, dreaming up playful ecosystems for our family and for the land. And that's a whole journey that I'll be sharing in another episode with Fred. Our goal had always been to bring this place back to life. And honestly, the house was never our dream. It was plain, vanilla. So while burning it down wasn't the plan, we made peace with it. As I planted gardens and tended chickens, I found myself wondering, how long ago did people raise chickens here? What other animals called this place home? My curiosity led me back to the woman we bought the farm from. I called her in 2020 asking about the history. She told me her parents once had peacocks in the old chicken coop. They loved draft horses. She even had a childhood horse that looked strikingly like the one that my daughter later bought with her own horse run. A full circle moment for her, seeing us living life in a similar rhythm. But what struck me was a comment that she made almost in passing. Just be careful how far back in time you go. Not all history is good. She didn't elaborate, and I didn't press, but that sentence stayed with me. Meanwhile, our life on the farm continued. We had chickens, we were slinging a lot of eggs, life felt busy, and it was full. And that's when we realized the farm needed a name. So Tom and I brainstormed, and we landed on Eureka Moon Farm. That in itself is an awesome story for another day, but it felt right. And then came the week to take the house down. It was intense, to say the least. The week started with our kids finding their cat dead on the road. So we buried her, had a little funeral. A couple of days later, our neighbor died in a tragic accident, crushed by his lawnmower. And on the very morning that my uncles came to help us tear down the farmhouse, the kids went outside to find their favorite chicken just dead in the yard. Three deaths, three losses, less than a week. It felt like we were being distracted, like the house was fighting back. Nothing worked smoothly that week, but we pressed on because in just under 7 hours, Tom, my uncles, and I had that house down and all the debris moved into a big burn pile that we had dug in the pasture. We were being careful to protect the windbreaks. Watching that fire burn was surreal. A very "what the hell are we doing" moment. But also, deep down, we knew it was necessary. Even if we didn't understand all the reasons why yet. So at this point, it's 2021. Farmhouse is now gone, and in its place, you're greeted by a massive hole as you pull into our driveway. About a year later, a friend stops by to visit. She just come from Tractor Supply, and she casually mentions this at the checkout. "I'm heading to my friend's farm in West Branch." The reply? "Hopefully it's not the place where the wife offed her husband." What? That comment stopped me cold. You gotta love small-town Iowa gossip, served up casually in the checkout line. And immediately, my mind flashed back to the woman's warning. Be careful how far back you go. Not all history is good. After my friend left, I called the seller again. This time I asked her directly, "Were you serious about that history? Like, was someone murdered here?" She admitted it was true. Someone had in fact been murdered on this land. But again, not much more was said. So I dug deeper. Since my husband's a real estate agent, I asked him to pull the abstract on our property. And a quick side note for anyone unfamiliar. An abstract is a historical document that traces the chain of ownership of a piece of land. It's like a paper trail of everyone who has ever held the deed. Our farm's abstract begins in 1854 with a land grant from President Fillmore to Edward Norris. Then it jumps to 1944 when the family that we bought from took ownership. That huge gap in time sparked even more questions for me. So I went into full sleuth mode, digging through names, dates, obituaries, anything I could find. But the pieces were not adding up. The man that I found that lived here had lived well into his 80s. He wasn't tragically murdered. Frustrated, I went back to the seller again. And this time, she just texts me the article. That was my duh moment. It unlocked a new layer of understanding. It turns out, this event was well known in our small town, just not to us. And no one told us when we bought the property. So for context, Iowa law does not require sellers to disclose deaths on a property unless you specifically ask. Homicides, only if the buyer brings it up. So why are we sharing the story now? Well, because it's now a part of our story. And because Tom and I believe in being open, transparent, and vulnerable. And because we were the last to know. And we don't want that to happen to whoever comes next. There is healing and knowing. I need you to know, this family is not defined by what happened on this farm. They didn't ask for their story to be a spectacle. They didn't want attention. They wanted peace. They are more than headlines. But life handed them something that no one deserves. Their family lived on this land. They built a life here. They loved here. What happened was horrific. But what they've done since, the grace, the quiet strength, that's the real story. And I share this today with deep respect for them. When we first moved here, I didn't know the history. I didn't know that Henry Madsen, the man who built the house, our barn, the outbuildings, was murdered on this very land. It wasn't until 2022, 80 years after his passing, that I learned that truth. We honored him that September. It was the 80th anniversary of his death. We shared his story, his craftsmanship, and his legacy. This was a man who built a life with his own hands, felling trees, milling wood, and raising a family. In buying this farm, we've always felt called to continue that legacy of stewardship. And as I started down this path of uncovering the land story, I came across a piece of writing by Henry's great-granddaughter, Julia. Her words were raw, poetic, and deeply personal. It was clear that she had been carrying this story for a long time, seeking closure, wrestling with unanswered questions. So I reached out to her. "Hey, I live on the land where your great-grandpa was murdered. If you ever want to chat about it, I'm here." And she did. In fact, visiting the farm was her New Year's resolution that year. She was searching for answers. But more than that, she was looking for peace. We talked about how we had learned the story, about the energy that we'd felt in the house, about how my own family's journey had strangely mirrored Henry's. You see, when I learned of this murder, I was the same age as Henry when he was killed. And he left behind two young boys, and they were the same age as my kids at the time. That hit me hard. And then I discovered that one of those boys lived just down the road from us. Every time I drove past his house, I felt this pull to stop, to let him know that I knew and that I cared. And then one day, Tom and I did. The kids were at their grandparents, and we pulled into his driveway. They knew exactly who we were and exactly what we wanted to talk about. It was humbling. We invited them to the farm, and they've been over here a few times since to see the barn, to watch our kids playing and thriving. All I've ever prayed for is healing for their family and for this land. Julia's words painted a vivid picture of what happened here. She wrote of her great-grandmother, Ruth, of a shotgun, a polka-dotted dress, children running through bean fields, of haylofts, hounds, and a small-town secret held for decades There are so many versions of the story. Some say that Ruth killed Henry in a moment of mental illness, and others whisper that her cousin was involved, that greed and family betrayal played parts. Court documents tell of an unhappy marriage, of Ruth's time in and out of hospitals. She was only 26 when the murder happened. She was declared insane and later restored to sanity, and she moved to Texas and remarried. But the truth remains tangled in those old fields. Julia wrote, and I quote, "From what I can see, there is blood filling the roots and veins of the ground the house is built on." That line is what made me reach out to her. Because standing here today, I can tell you that's no longer true. This land is full of life. It's full of love. That's what we are building here. The home, the house, that's what needed to come down. We have only ever been here loving and healing this land. And now that I knew the story, I knew my role here was even more important. As a mom, as a steward, as a healer. And then the story got even more personal for me. Because I found out that Henry's sister married into my mom's side of the family. They were actually the ones that helped with the boys after Henry's death. Julia has letters from Ruth written to my relatives. As if that wasn't enough, when I got the Rarit family tree book, which I talk about in episode 3, I realized something wild. The family we bought the farm from, they're connected to my dad's side of the family. So here I stand on this land, connected to this land from both sides of my family tree. The more that I learned about this, the more certain I became. I was called to this land for a reason. To listen, to heal, to break the cycles. Tearing down the house wasn't just about bad plumbing and rotten walls. It was about removing the container that held so much trapped pain. Even if we didn't understand that when we took it down. It's been 5 years. We're still living in what was supposed to be our temporary housing. And yet every piece of this journey feels like it unfolded exactly as it needed to. Even if it was super frustrating. This land is alive with love now. And I like to think that Henry is looking down on us, not as a tragedy, but as a continuation of what he started. We're not here to relive the past. We're here to redeem it. One thing that I've learned, the land doesn't forget. But it also doesn't hold grudges. Land holds space. It waits. It bears witness. For years, I thought of land as something you own, something you work. This place has taught me otherwise. Land is relationship. It's reciprocity. In small towns, we know each other's stories, but we don't always know the land's story. And sometimes the land remembers what people would rather forget. Sometimes it holds the stories that we aren't ready to hear until we are. What if the land holds not just memories, but medicine? We often think of land as a backdrop. It's just there. But land absorbs pain. It remembers, and it offers restoration, not as a quick fix, but in slow, sacred ways. This shift in thinking didn't happen overnight. It came from being here, from paying attention, from realizing this land wasn't just waiting to be used again. It was waiting to be understood. I'm reminded of a quote from Willa Cather's O Pioneers from 1913. The quote is, "We come and go, but the land is always here, and the people who love it and understand it are the people who own it for a little while." That quote has been ringing in my ears lately, because truly, we don't own the land. We belong to it for a little while. And it belongs to the story of those who've loved it before us. My hope is that our chapter here is one of healing. That what was once a place of grief has become a place of growth. And that the land feels that too. You see, my part in this story has not been big. It's been 5 years of small, quiet steps. Nothing dramatic, nothing newsworthy, just planting where the soil felt heavy, cleaning debris with reverence and showing up. Healing a place is not loud and it's not glamorous. It's mostly just shutting up and listening. But you can feel when a place exhales. It's subtle, but it's real. I want to talk for a minute about how we tell stories. We love to binge murder shows. We dissect crime scenes from our couches. But we rarely ask, what happens to the place where that happened? Headlines fade, Netflix specials come and go, but small towns, these stories ripple forever. Why are we as a society so obsessed with the crime, but so uninterested in the healing? What if instead of fixating on the who, we ask, how do we help the people and the land heal? A growing body of research shows that reconnecting with land, especially ancestral land, can increase our sense of purpose, identity, and healing. This is especially true for families carrying generational trauma or cultural disconnection. Yet we don't talk about this because healing is slow and it's quiet, which doesn't make for bingeable TV. But maybe it should. And for those of you thinking, well, thank God I don't live on land like that, I would like to gently challenge you to pause. And I'd ask you, how can you be so sure? People have roamed these lands for thousands of years. It's a little ignorant to think that tragedy only happens in hospitals, cemeteries, or car accidents. So many rural homes, forgotten farms, unsolved cases, stories unspoken, are hidden in the land. Here's what I want you to take with you today. You don't need a tragedy to start listening to your land. Maybe it's holding grief. Maybe it's holding joy. Either way, it's holding you too. Go walk your property. Notice what feels light. What feels heavy? Ask yourself, what stories are buried here? And more importantly, how can I be in relationship with this place? Because this isn't just history. It's presence. It's connection. It's restoration. To Henry's family, if you're listening, I want to be clear. This is not my story to own. But when we live in relationship with the place, we don't get to ignore what it holds. The land holds your story. And now, in a small way, it holds mine too. This story has been asking to be told. And if it found you today, there's probably a reason for that. I'm not here to retell the family tragedy. I'm here to share what it has taught me about listening, about legacy, and about healing. This is a story about the land, about what land remembers, about how it holds space, not grudges, and about what happens when we finally stop long enough to listen. And if you have listened to this story, I want to thank you for holding it gently. Healing is never just for one person or one place. It ripples. May we become better listeners to the land, to each other, to the stories beneath the surface. Eureka Moon Farm isn't perfect. No land is. Just look at the history of how we as humans have fought over it. But it's home to us for now. And I believe that we've been on this land to help it heal, just as it's helping us do the same. I want to leave you with this. What places have shaped you? Where do you feel the most connected? To the earth, to your story, to your truth. Let that be your invitation to remember, to return. And if you'd like to hear the family's perspective or read more from Julia, Henry's great-granddaughter's powerful reflections on this event, I can link to some of her writing in the show notes below. Her words bring a depth and nuance that only a family member can offer. I want to thank you for walking this part of the path with me. Let it sink in. We don't have to live on autopilot. We can live with roots, with story, with intention. And it all starts here. If this episode stirred something in you, pass it on. Share it, text it, send it to somebody that'll get it. Conversations like this don't just stay in our heads. They ripple outward, they spark change, and they shape culture. Next week, we're going to shift gears, but we're still staying true to the theme of rethinking what we think we know. I'll be joined by my dear friend, Aaron Peretti, for a conversation on innovation in real life, the work that has changed our thinking. It's not going to be tech buzzwords or corporate jargon. It's about how we challenge old systems, rethink how we live and work, and get curious about how we live life and the work that we do. You're not going to want to miss it. This is Mandy signing off. Until next time, stay rooted, be brave, and live wildly.